We now present the first program in a 9-part series on the decade that marked the mid-passage of the 20th century, the 1950s, a popular music essay written and hosted by Pete Myers.
First things first, let's talk about the title to the series.
This is great, this is great, Balls of Fire!
Jerry Lee Lewis, 1957, with a title and a catchphrase that's synonymous with the rocking 50s. But actually, it dates back to the 19th century, and in the year that I was born, it featured prominently in this classic Hollywood movie. The theme from Gone with the Wind, and in it, the unforgettable heroine, Scarlett O'Hara, says the phrase 4 times, and here's one example.
Now go back to the store, Frank, and then go home and take your medicine. You're not looking very well.
But Sugar, don't you think you'd better come
home with... Great balls of fire, don't bother me anymore, and don't call me Sugar.
Oh, all right.
Goodness gracious, this is great balls of fire!
1950.
When the decade began, I was 11, living in Europe, and popular music was stuck in a familiar groove, a hangover from the 40s. And even though he had been dead 5 years, the spirit of Glenn Miller lived on, and understandably so. Still recovering from the ravages of World War II, Western civilization was rising out of the ashes. But by 1950, post-war restoration was being replaced by production, and one nation was way out in the lead, the United States. In science and technology, in throwing out the old and creating a new consumer culture, Uncle Sam was the trendsetter. But on the music front, there was no wind of change, not yet. We were caught in a 40s time warp, and swing time gave way to dream time.
I'm aware my heart is a sad affair. There's much disillusion there, but I can't.
Just one of the hit records of 1950, I Can Dream, Can't I? By three legendary ladies of the 40s, the Andrew sisters. Patty, Maxime, and Laverne, who cut some 900 titles and sold over 60 million copies of their hits. By the time rock and roll arrived, their career was over. And even though they didn't know it at the start of the decade, the golden age of those magnificent dinosaurs, the big dance bands, were numbered. Bands like
Woody Herman, Les Brown, Ray Anthony, Paul Weston, Billy May.
Not forgetting the jazz greats like Ellington, Basie, Kenton, Goodman, and Armstrong, whose music had a profound effect on musicians in Europe. Jazz and the blues were the foundation of what was yet to come. And as Louis Armstrong said,
if it wasn't for jazz, there'd be no rock and roll.
We'll be right back. Count Basie's 1 o'clock jump, played by the Dutch big band that has evolved over the years and still exists today, the Skymasters. As the series originates in Holland, it's worth remembering that the Netherlands of the 50s was very different from the international, outward-looking Holland of the 90s. And the Dutch music industry had no international ambitions as it does today. Back then, everything was geared for the home market. And if you turned on the radio, this was the type of music that sold.
Ik weet in de polder een huisje te staan, verborgen door bloemen en struiken. Een slootje ervoor met een stoepje eraan en vensters met rood-witte luiken. Daar ga ik elk jaar met vakantie naartoe. Ik voer daar de kippen en melk er de koe. Ik maai en ik saai er zo'n beetje en zoen in het klompenhok Geetje. Geetje, wat ben je toch mooi? Kleine Geetje uit de polder, kind van het lage land. Blond van haar en blauw van ogen, geef mij toch je hand. Kleine Geetje uit de polder, zeg me nu eens gauw. Als het koren rijp is, word je dan mijn vrouw.
His name, Eddie Christiani, the song Greetje from the Polder, which fitted nicely with the windmills, clogs, and cheesy image the Dutch reveled in four decades ago. Of course, today it's easy for a younger generation to knock a song like that. But it's rarely done, because it's become part of our music culture. Across the Atlantic, a similar thing was happening, and quite a number of songs from 1950 were destined to become part of Western pop culture. Take this next recording, for instance. The 50s was the golden era of the jukebox. In America, there was one for every 330 people. And then, one spin only set you back a nickel.
Put another nickel in the Nickelodeon. All I want is having you and music, music, music. I'd do anything for you, anything you'd want me to. All I want is kissing you and music, music, music. Closer, my dear, come closer. The nicest part of any melody is when you're dancing close to me. So put another nickel in the Nickelodeon. All I want is loving you and music, music, music.
Classic that brought Teresa Brewer a little touch of immortality. Music, music, music. Selling the product has always been the first priority of the recording industry. And when the 50s began, the average age of a typical record buyer had not skidded into the teens. The customer was in his or her early 20s, known as young adults. To suit their taste, most popular music was bland and so-called sophisticated. The stars were polished, clean-cut, well-groomed, and they ambled through a repertoire of antiseptic amiability. Don't forget, those were the days when a fella took a girl in his arms and kept her there on the dance floor. And so songs of the period were totally preoccupied with romance.
I was dancing with my darling to the Tennessee waltz when an old friend I happened to see. I introduced her to my loved one, and while they were dancing, my friend stole my sweetheart from me. I remember the night and the Tennessee waltz. Now I know just how much I lost. Yes, I lost my little diamond the night they were playing the beautiful Tennessee Waltz.
The Tennessee Waltz that had the world 1-2-3-ing with Patti Page. In Great Britain, when they waltzed, they were addicted to the precise tempo laid down by an orchestra whose influence on ballroom dancing would continue for decades. The Orchestra, Victor Sylvester. Fascination is the title, and only years later were we to discover that the melody was composed by none other than Maurice Ravel. In 1950, when India became a republic, North Korea invaded the South, thereby starting the Korean War. When the Cold War and the nuclear arms race between Russia and the United States took off, and when an American senator named Joe McCarthy was finding Reds under every bed, an American singer made his European debut in London. He had just become the highest-paid singer in the world by signing a $1 million radio contract. Yes, folks, those were the days when radio had money. The London critics weren't too impressed by the crooner. Said one,
"You can hear every word he sings, which is a pity considering his material. It's like being force-fed with treacle."
Somebody loves me, I wonder who. I wonder who she can be. Somebody wants me, I wish that I knew. Who it can be worries me. Every girl that passes by, I shout, "Hey, maybe you were meant to be my loving babe." Somebody loves me, I wish that I knew. Maybe, baby, baby, it's you.
Well, the London critics may not have loved him in 1950, but at that point his career, already then in its 10th year, had reached a creative low point. By the mid-50s, it would pick up and reach dizzying heights of vocal craftsmanship that have never been equaled by any other male singer. But then Sinatra is in a class that only a few artists achieve in a lifetime. By 1950, two other male singers had been established in popular music, whose voices and recordings will always be associated with the pre-rock years. One was born in Chicago in 1913, original name Frank Lovaccio, better known as Frankie Lane.
You train, hi, hi. You train, clippity clapping through the wind and rain. They'll keep going till they drop, clippity clap, clippity clap, clippity 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 clapping along. There's a letter full of sadness in this black round the border. A pair of boots for someone who had been made to order. A Bible in the pack for the Reverend Mr. Black. Get along.
The forerunner to Rawhide and the singer who has a unique place in the annals of pop, Frankie Lane. Precisely why, I'll discuss in a later program. The other distinctive voice belongs to a pioneer, a man whose appeal crossed racial barriers at a time when it seemed impossible, a man whose magic found lasting acceptance by a mass white audience. No mean achievement for a black performer in the 50s. But then Nat King Cole, like Sinatra, was in a class of his own.
Mona Lisa, Mona Lisa, men have named you. You're so like the lady with the mystic smile. Is it only 'cause you're lonely they have blamed you for that Mona Lisa strangeness in your smile? Do you smile to tempt a lover, Mona Lisa? Or is this your way to hide a broken heart? Many dreams have been brought to your doorstep. They just lie there and they die there. Are you warm? Are you real, Mona Lisa? Are just a cold and lonely, lovely work of art?
And if romance is what the public wanted, no one served it up with such finesse and sensitivity as Nat King Cole. There was one other voice that took root in 1950. It came from Hollywood. His name was Alfredo Coccosa, a truck driver whose extraordinary voice took him to Tinseltown in the late 40s, where he starred in a series of forgettable musicals tailored round his vocal pipes. His was a powerful operatic tenor, and for a brief time, he started a vogue for serious music in the popular domain. At MGM, the Image boys got to work on that Italian-American name and rechristened him Mario Lanza.
Tra de goli con nittem fatto, in cielo va. Se va, con malla vien dall'andrassata, guisaglia sa. Yam, funiculi, funicula, funiculi, funicula, ngappi, yammia, funiculi, funicula.
One of the major influences on taste and style in the 50s was the cinema. Christian Dior may have created his new look in women's fashion in Paris, but when all was said and done, the ladies took their cue from the likes of Joan Crawford, Lana Turner, and Elizabeth Taylor, who in 1950 had just married her first husband, Nicky Hilton. Luella Parsons, the dreaded queen of Hollywood gossip, wrote,
"In spite of all that's been printed and hinted, I believe the marriage will last."
Poor Luella, she never could get anything right. In 1950, the Dream Factory produced one film that has since achieved cult status for a number of reasons. It was witty, sophisticated, and starred Betty Davis, who gave a larger-than-life performance that launched the careers of 1,000 drag queens.
Fasten your seatbelt. Going to be a bumpy night.
In that same picture, All About Eve, a stunning young actress is said to have made her debut and launched her legend. Legend, yes. Debut, mm-mm. In fact, 2 years previously, in 1948, in a film called Ladies of the Chorus, she got to sing a couple of songs, but made no impact with the public whatever.
Anyone can see I love you. Anyone can see I care. The smile in your direction tells a world my heart is filled with nothing but affection. Lock me in your arms forever. That's a place I want to be, so anyone can see that I belong to you and you belong to me.
Marilyn Monroe, 1948. Just for the record, she was 37, 23, 37. In All About Eve, she had a bit role, playing a dumb blonde with suave George Saunders as her cynical admirer.
A waiter.
And that isn't a waiter, my dear, that's a butler.
Well, I can't yell, oh, butler, can I? Maybe somebody's name is butler.
You have a point. An idiotic one, but a point.
I don't want to make trouble. All I want is a drink.
Leave it to me. I'll get you one.
Thank you, Mr. Fabian.
Well done. I can see your career rising in the east like the sun.
Prophetic words indeed, not just rise, but in the process create a sex goddess whose legend and allure seemingly goes on forever.
The deedly 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 dum, boop boop be doop.
Ever since she went over the rainbow, the most popular voice in Hollywood was Judy Garland. But by 1950, due to overwork and pill popping, she was over the top in making her last film for MGM, who finally sacked her. Later, she made a comeback, and how? Meanwhile, at Warner Brothers, a new star was emerging who would become the most successful female vocalist of the early 50s. In those Warner musicals, she used to be constantly hanging out with Gordon McRae, an old-fashioned song, and a barbershop quartet.
Picture you upon my knee, tea for two, and two for tea, me for you, and you for me alone. Nobody near us to see us or hear us. No friends or relations on weekend vacations. We won't have it known, dear, that we own a telephone. Dear.
Day will break and I'm gonna wake and start to bake a sugar cake for you to take, for all the boys to see.
Honey-voiced, honey-blonde, the girl everyone wanted to have next door, Doris Day, in her 50 film, Tea for Two. Ironically, one of the biggest hits of the year was a film theme, and it came from the most unexpected quarter. It's quite unique, you see, because until it came along, the recording industry never dreamed that themes and incidental music written for a movie had commercial possibilities. Songs were another ballgame. Songs from movies constantly went into the mainstream of pop music, and composers like Berlin, Porter, Kern, and Gershwin produced some of their best material for celluloid. But then came a British thriller about post-war Austria, The Third Man. Its director wanted an authentic feel to the picture, so he got a local musician, Anton Karas, to write a theme, and that started a worldwide mania for an instrument known as the zither. And though we didn't know it then, a new category in popular music, the soundtrack. the Harry Lime theme. And it's no coincidence that a simple theme from a grey film set on the very border of the Cold War should fire the public's imagination. The world of 1950 was in the process of being divided between two nuclear superpowers, America and the Soviet Union. Colonial empires in Africa and Asia were beginning to stir and find their voice at the United Nations. China had awoken and crossed something called the 38th parallel in Korea, an Asian peninsula that would embroil the West in a savage war. No one was quite certain where the decade was heading, and a mood of complacency settling for the status quo seemed to have set in. It was a mood that was reflected in the music of that year. But the process of change had begun, and very slowly it would begin to take shape in the following year. And where was the pearl in the sea of mediocrity? Where was that musical voice that reflected the drama and truths of the human condition? In 1950, it didn't exist in the English-speaking world, but it did in France. And the whole of Europe was captivated. That pearl was Piaf.
And that was the first program in a 9-part series written and produced by Pete Myers. Great Balls of Fire is a Radio Netherlands presentation.